Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Classic Camera Revival. I'm Alex Lokes, and I'm one of your co-hosts for today, and it's February 2016, and today we are seeing the light. That's right, we are going to be talking about light meters.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Okay, and we're back, and that's right. Other than the camera, and a lot of times some cameras have meters, some cameras don't have meters. Sometimes you just want something that to give you a little bit more of a creative edge when it comes to metering your image, right? So what better thing than to pick up a light meter? And there's a lot of different light meters out there. There are a lot of different types and styles of light meters right there. I'm not going to go into really the technical specifics. We have a bunch of stuff about it on the episode notes, which you can find linked usually on Facebook and Twitter. So we're going to be talking about the light meters that we use the most, meters we like, why we like them. So starting us off, we have John Meadows.
Hi, folks. I'm going to talk about actually two distinctly different approaches to metering. They both sort of cover opposite ends of the chronology for meters. The meter I'm holding in my hand is something that I got given in a box of assorted photo junk, most of which was definitely junk, but this meter definitely not. This is a Weston Universal Exposure Meter. This model dates from, it was manufactured between 1939 and 1945. And I think this one, the example that I have, probably sat in a box unused because first of all, it's in pretty, like I wouldn't call it minty, but it's in pretty good shape. But more significantly is that it's actually pretty darn accurate, at least for the, except for super low light, because it is a selenium meter, and selenium cells are not the best low light performers compared to, let's say, cadmium sulfite or silicon. But apart from that, like when I dug it out and I measured it against a, first of all, a DSLR and an iPhone app, and it worked really, really well. Like I'd say within about a third of a stop. What's neat about this is you look at it, you pick it up, you want to use it the traditional way way to hold it, which is wrong. You actually have to hold it. Now, I'm afraid this is, how do I describe this audio?
You hold it like you would a camera, yes. like a digital point and shoot camera where you're looking through the screen.
Yeah, that's actually, thank you for rescuing me there, Alex. You hold it up, and like a lot of meters, you just basically read the number off the left-hand scale, and you match. You turn the dial on the right-hand side, and then you can read the exposures. Now, what's interesting is they have the f-stops and the shutter speeds in 1/3 stop increments.
Oh wow!
So a very, very precise. The flip side, though, is that this is minuscule type. I'd say because this is such an early modern meter, they didn't quite get the ergonomics are still sort of primitive. There are things that later meters would have improved. But once you get used to it, it's still very, very usable. One thing about the Edward Weston meters, and this is not the Weston photographer.
Okay.
This is an electrician who got started doing stuff in the 1890s. So
okay.
Nothing,
I was
nothing
going
to
ask
do.
On that if it was any relation to the photographer.
I did look it up because I knew it would come up. But one thing about when this meter came out, it does not use what today we would call ASA or DIN. It uses the Weston scale. And I'm sort of wondering, why do you need another scale? And the reading that I found told me that if you go back in like the late, you know, the mid-30s, 40s, that film speed ratings were not as precise as they are today.
Okay.
Different manufacturers would sort of work in different safety factors or fudge factors or just marketing BS in some cases. And so the philosophy of the Weston meter company, or the company made the meter, said, you know, if we're making a meter which is pretty darn accurate, why do we want to spoil accuracy by having the user use bad settings? So they came up with their own scale. And so if you get one of these today, you have to be able to convert the modern, what we call the ISO now, into Weston. And it's not hard to do. It's typically about a third of a stop or so. Okay. So for example, if you're shooting 400 ISO, 320 would be what you'd shoot here. Or if you're shooting 20 ISO, about 16. And if you Google Weston scale, you'll find all sorts of pages that will give you the table.
Okay, we'll make sure to include the link to those in the episode notes. Okay.
And so this is one end of the modern metering era.
Now, one more note on that one. Would that be similar to what would have been carried by combat photographers in World War II?
Well, this is definitely a World War II, like 39 to 45.
Yeah.
So if they were using meters,
they would be
using something like this. Because this was, you know, I think if you go back then, this was considered like one of the gold standards.
Their meters
were accurate. There are also a cine version as well that had the markings for movies. And, you know, film's expensive. If you're making a movie, you want to get it right.
Right, exactly.
So this did the job. Now, I'm going to take a moment and go to the other end of metering history. And I have to admit that even though most of my photography is black and white, one thing I do like on my iPhone is a light meter app called Light Meter. I guess the guy didn't spend a lot of money on marketing. Mm. But what I find about this, like, it's free, or you can, you know, basically give the guy $5 to pay for a beer, and I gave him $5. I find this is a really great app because you can use it as a spot meter.
Okay.
Like, basically, you point it towards your subject, and then all you have to do is tap the where on the screen, and it's a very, very small degree.
Oh, so nice.
For example, if I look across the table right now, Mike's wearing a black sweater today. So if I tap on the black sweater, you know, is how it goes.
But
if I, let's say, then go and look at the wall behind a sort of a light beige, I get almost like a stop difference.
About a half second, yeah.
So if you're getting into things like zone system, or if you have a complicated scene to meter, this does the job. And I measured it against, like, back when I did the test against the DSLR and the Weston meter, and this is definitely quite accurate.
Yep.
And, you know, free or $5 if you support the guy, it's, you're not going to buy even a used meter for $5.
Not
so I would recommend that if you're just getting into metering, try one of the iPhone apps. A lot of them are free.
Yep.
And most of them do the job.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone these days has, well, almost everyone these days has a smartphone with a built-in camera. So, yeah, use what you got. Okay, next up, Mike has a meter as well. And he has a very famous one, if you're a fan of the Film Photography Podcast, although the name is different here in the Great White North.
Yeah, well, the one I have is known as the Gossen Luna Pro, but it is not the F model that is well-touted by Michael Rosso. It's actually the SBC. Now, what the SBC stands for, I haven't looked it up. I'm going to see if I can find it and have
it. I don't think it means anything.
Maybe not. Probably not. But then again, the Gossen Luna Pro, the F, actually symbolizes that it has a flash meter built in. Whereas the SBC, which, who knows what the heck that means. I mean, they probably just threw darts at a board and, hey, look, we landed on an S, a B, and a C. There we go. Anyway, this meter is really, really simple to use. It's very similar to the Gossen Luna Pro F, except that, of course, as I mentioned, it doesn't have the flash meter built into it, but it does have an attachment for flash metering. And it uses a 9-volt battery, which is fantastic. So there's no worry about a selenium cell that slowly dies over time. And as far as it needing a mercury battery, that's not an issue with this because it's a little bit more modern, thus using a 9-volt. And those things are literally a dime a dozen. You can buy them anywhere. And when I say a dime a dozen, I'm quite serious. You can go to the dollar store and pick one up for a buck. I mean, how much better can you get for that? So for that meter, I find it's super accurate. I've never had a wrong metering with it yet. I mean, I've even used it when my battery was basically dead. I mean, I took it out, called over one of my kids. I said, hey, I don't know if my battery works. Can you test it? Sure enough, they stick out their tongue and they they kind of just make a funny little face on it, but they even told me that I think your battery is dead, which is kind of funny because they're used to testing a battery that way that is really strong, because they're always looking for a battery for their electronic toys. And I taught them, hey, you want to know if it works? Lick it. So, sure.
They won't do that with their car battery, I hope.
No. It's very specifically, I told them, 9-volt batteries only. These ones with the two points on the top, you can lick it and find out if the battery works. It's not a very pleasant feeling, but it's kind of priceless for the fact that they have no qualms about doing it.
Okay, so little thing on SBC. I think I figured out something of what it would mean. It has to do with the actual element that does the metering. It's a silicon blue CDS, SBC.
There you go. That was easy. It probably explains why if you look at the little SBC mark in the middle of the meter, it is blue. So maybe that sounds pretty darn close to me.
Yeah.
And there's another way that you know it's also a little bit more modern is because it's using the silicone. And silicone is a lot more accurate than the selenium cells.
Yep.
Or even cadmium sulfide. It was sort of like a third generation technology.
Yeah, and there are some people that are actually taking, say, Kodak Retina cameras that have a dead cell. And what they are doing is they're actually changing it from selenium to silica or silicone. And they're finding that doing the adjustment, they do have to use some resistance in there because otherwise their meter will be off.
Right.
But they are putting it in and it is working. They're getting meter readings off it that they can use. So if I can find any of the links to seeing where people have done it, I'll happily post it. But I had read it, but as it is with the internet, I mean, you wait like 3-4 months down the line and you try to do a search to find it again and it's gone. I mean, yeah. That's why they say the best place to bury a dead body is page 2 of a Google search.
So what do you like the most about this?
Well, I find one of the best things I like about it is the fact that, well, for one, it's not a selenium cell. Right. So, yeah, you do need a battery, but the fact that it's a 9-volt battery, so it's really super common to get a hold of. It's also not really super small, so when you're holding it in your hand, you feel that you're actually holding something. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's also some really nice attachments. It's got a 7 and 15 degree spot meter attachment that you can get. There's a attachment that you can get for when you're doing darkroom enlargements. And there's a couple other ones that you can do. You can do incident metering. You can do reflective metering.
Plus it has a huge range of
it's film speeds. It's insane. I mean, you can go down to 0.8.
So if you're shooting some of the FPP super positive film or the Shmina Svema Micrat Orto, that's a 0.75.
Yeah, so that's a really nice thing is you set it to 0.8, but then you've got the adjustments for your filters.
Yep.
So you just slightly change your filter adjustment.
Yeah.
And there you go. Now you're going plus one EI, plus two EI, plus three, exactly. Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's such a versatile and such a useful meter that, I mean, for what it costs, it is fantastic. You can put it up against any modern DSLR, any modern meter today, and you will easily hold its own against it, no problem. And honestly, they're really inexpensive. I mean, I bought mine for $60. I've seen them for listings anywhere between 30 to a little bit over 100.
Yep.
So, I mean, do a little bit of searching. You can find it for a really half-decent price.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and the nice thing is because they're basing off of the original Gauss and Luna series. I mean, there's a lot of people that have the ones that use the old Mallory Mercury batteries.
Absolutely.
And if they're familiar with those, going to this one, you're not changing anything. You're not having to learn a whole new system. It's push the button in the side to turn on the meter, let it go after it's got its reading. It's got the needle, so
you're just line it up.
Yeah, it's nice and easy. It's not the needle doesn't bounce around for changing light. You can push the button in, get your reading, and there it is. It's locked in, and you just adjust your dial to set your settings. You're done.
Does this model have like the rocker switch for high light, low light, like for the two ranges?
No, this one is single range, so there's no real There's no real guesswork. You just point it at its subject.
Most of the Goss and Luna series is like that. I have the Luna 6F, which is the Canadian version, the international version of the Luna Pro F, right? Like Nikon's were N80s yep. or F80s in the international market, N80 in the American market. Basically the same thing, just different branding.
Yeah. Yeah, Exacta did the same thing. I mean, yep. in Europe, you had the Exacta Varex, but because of some branding issues in the U.S., they changed it from Varex to VX. So, yep. I mean, it's just minor changes.
Yeah, exactly. The meter I have it's somewhat of a specialty unit, and actually it is hands down my favorite meter, especially when I'm working doing landscape work or even low light urban exploration architectural work. It's the Pentax Spot Meter 5. This is a 1 degree spot meter, so it's extremely accurate. You point it at what you want, you pull the trigger, it gives you an EV reading on the inside scale, and then you adjust the dial to match, and then you can clearly see your aperture and your shutter speed. And the reason I like it is because I use it to apply one tiny little bit of the zone system that I actually know and understand, where I put the shadows into zone 4. That means I will meter for the darkest area I want the most detail in, and then I'll underexpose it by one stop. And having it visually represented here on the dial makes it super easy to apply. The only thing I really don't like about this is that it only goes down to ASA or ISO 6. So if you're shooting like the really slow speed stuff, which I mostly do in 35 millimeter, right? Usually I shoot between 25 to 400, a little bit over when I'm shooting medium format in 35 millimeter. And I've even gone as far as using this towards working with my digital cameras as well. When I got my first one, I was in New York City, and I had gone into the famous public library, the one that was featured in the first Ghostbusters.
Oh yeah, that movie. I love that.
Absolutely
one.
Absolutely gorgeous.
That part was fantastic.
And in the main reading room, my DSLR was just, the matrix metering was just horrible. It just wasn't getting what I wanted. I would either lose the shadows or blow out the highlights. So it's like, what do I do? So I started using this and trying to find the middle ground with this spot meter, and bam, pull out and getting even incredible shots out of a digital camera. The one type of film I don't recommend using this on straight up is slide film, simply because it doesn't have as much of a way of a dynamic range. But if you're shooting Portra 400 or any sort of black and white film, this is the meter. This is the one I use for large format and for even medium format like my Hasselblad. And it looks a bit like a speed trap radar.
I was going to say that. Yes, it does.
I was going to say.
It's a smaller version of it.
So I do get some interesting looks if I'm stopped on the side of the road.
I can see
that. Well, you could have some real fun on the highway, you know, make some money.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you know why I pulled you over? Yes. You were going a little bit fast. Give me a 50 and we'll look the other way.
You were going F-128.
Nice. Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. I have too much respect for the decents in the law enforcement community. And last but certainly not least, Donna has a nice little meter that's great for people who are just getting into it.
Yes, I have. Okay, I have with me this iconic Studio Deluxe 2. The model number on this one is the L398M. Now, I'm going to be honest, it's my third time using a light meter. I'm new to this, so I'm going to ask Michael here to help me. He's been teaching me, along with John, on how to use this, because John has one of these himself. It has some weight to it. It is kind of a heavy light meter, but from my understanding, it is pretty simple to use, and so far from what I'm seeing, it is. I do like it. It's different. It's different from the other light meters that are on the table here. It's got different, what are these things called at the top?
Different grids.
Different grids that you can put on the top that you can use.
So what do the grids do?
Okay.
Well, there's four of them that come in the pack.
I know of two of the grids for it is currently the one that's on it is used for in is for reflective metering.
Okay.
And then it's got a little ball. White dome.
So white dome for incident.
Incident.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Out of the box, it's normally used as an incident meter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, for me, I use reflective metering for pretty much everything.
Yeah, same here.
So for me to use incident metering, I'm just not one for it. So I've been teaching Donna basically how to use reflective metering just because, well, I find for doing like 4x5 work for landscapes and stuff, I prefer using reflective.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, I also do some spot metering too. So the only way to do that is reflective.
Yeah.
So just to give her a little bit of a help on this, because I've kind of sort of figured it out. Actually, I kind of figured out how to use the reflective on this. when you're doing incident reading on this with the white dome, it's got a little slide known as the high slide. And what that does is it helps block some of the light getting to the selenium cell. So this is a selenium meter, so there's no batteries involved. And make sure that that you do keep it in the dark when it's not in use. But this high slide, since it blocks some of the light, just like if you've ever taken a look at some older cameras for their light meters, when on the very front, you'll see a little window. And when you turn your aperture or you turn your shutter speed, you'll see inside, you'll see little tiny holes. They'll get smaller and smaller depending on what your aperture or your shutter speed or even your film speed is set to. And what that does is it blocks some of the light so that the meter actually has to work just a little bit harder to get the electricity to your needle to adjust it so you can see where the heck you are as far as the amount of light coming into it. So the way this one works is very similar to how I was mentioning about the Gaussin, is that it has an on-off button, which is dead center. And just like the Gaussin, if you push and hold it in and you give it a tiny bit of a twist, it'll lock in. And what you can do with that is you can hold it, point it towards the light, and as it changes, it gives you a different reading each time. So we turn that off just so I can just show. Got it?
Yep.
So far?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay. Now, the other thing is the way it also works is that there is a scale on it, and it goes from 0 all the way up to 1.25K. Now, that scale, I'm not quite sure of the significance to it, but what it basically, it's good possibility that it's lumens.
Probably.
What it basically does is it gives you a number at the top. So let's say it points to just around 640. On the bottom side, you've got two different scales. You've got the L scale and the H scale. L is obviously for if you're not using the high slide for an incident reading, you use the L scale. If you are using the high slide, you use the H scale. It's just the amount of light coming into the meter, and this way it gives you a more accurate reading. So as I said, if it goes to 640 on the meter, then you adjust your dial so that on, let's say, with the high slide or if we're doing reflective metering, we put that to the H side of the scale, we put it to the 640, set our film speed, and that gives us our reading of whatever it is that we're shooting. Let's say we're shooting 100 speed film. It'll probably give us a rating of around F16 at, well, let's just do a quick check. Yeah, so F16 at about 1/2000th of a second, but that's at 800. So let's go back down to ISO 100, which everybody seems to like to shoot at. So 1/250th F16, so it's basically working like at Sunny F11. So this really, really simple. Now, the one thing I do like about this is you can hold this right up in front of your face. And let's say you've got your photo grid. Well, now my photo grid's pointing towards me, but I want to find out the light across the table at Alex.
Just turn it around.
I can turn that head around and point it right at Alex, push my little button, and get my reading. Now, of course, we don't have a lot of light in here, so I'm not going to get much of a reading. But the fact that I can do this, if I'm outside, this means that I don't have to point it first at my subject, take the reading, and then turn it around. I can sit there and hold it pointing at the subject. As I mentioned, how I can keep it in the on position, and as light changes, I can see those settings and put them right into my camera right away. So
nice.
Honestly, this is a fantastic meter. They are not inexpensive.
No, not at all.
No.
But sometimes you can really manage to luck out and you can find one for a really, really good price. parts are still readily available. I mean, you can go on to B&H Photo.
They still make those.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. If you lose the high slide, you can go to B&H Photo and pick one up. I'm not sure of a Canadian supplier myself. I've tried looking at Vistec. I've tried looking at Henry's. Neither of them had any parts whatsoever to do with this. In fact,
they don't carry much in the way of light meters and the light meters. They do have are more of the high-end Siconics.
Don't want to go new, you can always go on Kijiji or Craigslist.
Or KH.
Or
KH, yep. KH is fantastic for
it. B&H has a fantastically huge selection also. But yeah, no. The meters that Henry's and Vistec sell these days are the high-end, like $700-$800 Siconics that are both incident reflective and spot. I was looking at potentially upgrading my and reducing the 3 meters that I use, my one Siconic, my Gaussin Luna 6F, and my Pentax Spot Meter 5, and just consolidating into one unit. I don't want to spend $800. I could take that $800 and buy a new wide angle lens for my 4x5.
Yep. Or heck, you can even buy half a lens. Half a lens for your Hasselblad.
The right lens I could get for that much.
I think the important point is that there are options in all price ranges, ranging from free for an iPhone app up to the more sophisticated meters, or like the flash the studio flash meters, which have a different kind of different setup.
Exactly.
The thing about the Siconic and the models in that series is it's very sort of iconic Siconic.
Also,
they're very very popular in the movie industry as well.
Yeah, well, that's what the newer Siconics are designed for, with the spot incident or reflective metering, is that you have that creative control. And that's really what I like about light meters, is that they give you that control. You can meter how you want it. You don't have to be tied to what your camera tells you to do.
And probably I would also say that no meter discussion would be complete without the no meter option, which is Sunny 616, which is like one over the on a bright sunny day, one over the speed of the film is your shutter at f16. It makes sense to memorize a few of those, especially like with black and white film with that's latitude. Like I might not try it with slide film too much.
Actually, it works quite well.
Oh, it's beautiful with slide.
You have to have a really, really good eye because it's so easy to blow out highlights.
If you're new at it for your first time, I wouldn't recommend it.
The first time I shot Sunny 16, I shot a roll of Astia.
Oh, wow.
And it worked perfectly.
Oh, awesome.
I also have shot my digital cameras using Sunny 16.
Well, this is coming from the Alex.
It is the Alex Lauch.
That's how it worked for him. So, just
to prove a point to somebody who basically said, oh, Sunny 16, I don't really need to learn that these days because my camera has a meter and blah, blah, this and that. And it probably wouldn't work on digital anywhere. So I'm like, well, I'll challenge you to this, right? I'll shoot nothing but Sunny 16. You shoot with your meter. We'll see which photos are better.
Yep.
And the Sunny 16 digitals were like dead on. Like there was no adjustments necessary in post to get the exposure right.
Yeah. Now speaking of Sunny 16, I've got this little Calamar A. It was actually one of the first cameras that I had purchased myself. I bought it shortly after I got my Spotmatic, and it's just a straight, very very simple camera. I think it's got about 4 different shutter speeds. It's got aperture ranges from 3.5 to f/16, and it's scale focus. So you kind of just point it, adjust your focus to how you want it and shoot. I took a roll of Sensia, put it through that, shot nothing but Sunny 16. All the shots, absolutely gorgeous.
Yep.
It really does work really well.
For those of you that are interested in it as well, you can also find it online. Just if you want to print it out, there's a lot of information on it.
Yeah, Google Sunny 16 and you'll find a gazillion hits.
Yeah, absolutely. Slide rules you can build, like you actually do it yourself. Slide rules, get some cardstock, print out on the cardstock, cut it, put it all together.
Put it in your pocket, and you can just point it up towards
the light up above you. Say, what kind of light do I have? Oh, look, it's cloudy. Let's pull it out a little bit. It's cloudy. And it will. And on the bottom, it'll have your shutter speed. It'll have your ISO. It'll have your f-stops. And you're good to go. I mean, you can't get much better than that. It's really accurate. And speaking of which, guess what? The wonderful little Kodak Signet 35 had a Sunny 16 meter on it, on the back, a little slide scale.
Oh, calculator. Cool. Yeah.
Yep. It was fantastic. It had Super X, it had Kodachrome, and Plus X, all the wonderful films that are no longer available today. But hey, I mean, the fact that they had a Sunny 16 scale right on the back of the camera for for shooting, for, well, let's face it, a lot of people that bought these were not really amateurs. They were advanced amateurs shooting this, but right. It meant they didn't have to have a meter on them. They could just look, hey, I've got such a light, put the little slide over, and there you go. You got your settings. Yeah.
Nice.
Certainly beats, what's that one that you have on the Argus A? The
extinction meter.
Yes.
I call that prehistory. That's prehistoric. We will not discuss it further. At least not the metering. The camera's fine, but extinction meters
are extinct.
Look for a reason. Look it up. It's rather interesting.
Yeah.
I've actually, speaking of which, I actually did kind of use the extinction meter on the Argus. And some of the readings I got when I used it, I'll happily share a photo of it. I've got one of a tractor that I used nothing but the extinction meter. I was shocked. It came out really well.
Nice. Nice. Okay, so now we're going to be talking a little bit about something a little newer within the photography world. As many people know, we always hear the news that, oh no, they're canceling this film, or this film's going to be stopping production here and there. But the nice thing is that there are new films coming out, and that's really exciting that people are still researching and producing new films beyond what we see from pretty much the standard lines that we get out of Kodak and Ilford, because they're really the benchmarks, because Ilford hasn't canceled a film. They've upgraded films, like you've gotten the HP3, right? HP4, HP5, HP5+, same with the FP4, the Pan F, and all that other fun stuff. Kodak, again, very, very standard. The last film that they put out were the Portra, the new Portra lines, the 160 and 400, and those are fantastic films. But the film line that I'm actually really excited about is the Rollei RPX line.
Oh, yes.
Mostly because, to me, and I've talked to Joan at Burlington Camera about this film, is that we both agree that these are the spiritual successors to the famous, legendary EGFA APX films.
Yes.
And are heads and tails above their retro line, the Retro 100, Retro 400. And I say it's a spiritual successor, and people are allowed to disagree with me on this one, is because it comes into standard three flavors that the EGFA came in, the 25, the 100, and the 400. And this year I've been doing I'm working on a 52 roll project, which involves nothing but the RPX line of films. And it's something that most of us has shot about it. And probably the first one, and the best one in my mind, is the RPX 25. And John, I know you've shot that quite a bit.
I love the RPX 25, both in 35 millimeter and in 120. Because it's such a fine grained film, I can develop it in a sharpness enhancing developer like Rodinal in 35 millimeter, and you know, grain is not going to be an issue, and the sharpness you get is just amazing. And of course, in 120, you might as well be shooting a view camera,
exactly, mm-hmm.
because the results are so good. The very first time I shot RPX, I guess, was earlier last year. Developed the first roll, and take it out of the tank. I said, highlights look a bit. It's a contrasty film.
Yes.
As films without speed tend to be. And I'm looking at the highlights. There might be some blocking. So I said, well, let's see what happens. Dried it, and I scanned it. And the negative might look blocked, but there is highlight detail to be had. And I found that it's actually hard to block up that film.
Yeah.
As long as you may have to do some work in post, like with the contrast and the levels, or if you're printing.
Yeah, but nothing scans perfectly the first time either.
No. And or if you're printing in the darkroom, you have to choose the appropriate grade of paper.
Or
and
the appropriate filter.
Filter, some burning in. But it holds highlight details very, very well.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was shooting it last weekend out in Renfrew County, and when I pulled it out of the tank, I thought, oh great, either my meter's off, or you're shooting in snow in very flat light, and it looked really, really harsh on the contrast. But as soon as I got into the scanner, it's like, whoa,
it's different.
That looks absolutely incredible. I can't wait to get that stuff into the darkroom.
Yeah, I had a chance to shoot the 400 speed film.
Okay.
I threw that through my Canon T90. And when I shot that film, I actually was shooting some infrared in a box camera. I think we actually went over this last year about shooting infrared in a box camera. But the other film that I had alongside it was my Canon T90 loaded up with some Rolly RPX 400. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. I really, really like that film. I mean, sure, 400 speed film, 35 millimeters, a little bit grainy. I mean,
but it's not that grainy, even in 400.
I was gonna say the only thing is I had developed it in Rodinal, so may have helped along the graininess.
Just a tad.
But here's the thing. I've got a shot of this little girl playing in the leaves. And the light, it was pretty strong light. I mean, we had light coming from, we had the great shadow detail that she, from behind her, or should I say in front of her, depending on what angle you're looking at. We had a lot of sunlight coming in from the top, coming down through the leaves that she's throwing up in the air. We had the highlights because she had like white blonde hair, and yet it just looks fantastic.
Yeah,
I've got another shot of my son holding a little point and shoot camera in his hand, and it is super, super sharp. And the other shot is probably one that we have in our show notes with my box camera with the filter on it. I shot that on the T90 with that film, and it is razor sharp. Mm-hmm. It is just incredible. This, I mean, Rolly, you can buy the Rolly RPX. I believe Agfa has the exact same line because it's the same film as their APX. I believe it's the same.
Agfa who's producing the film.
Yeah, so you get the Agfa APX or their Rolly RPX. Same film, just different
branding. I took the RPX film when I went to North Carolina, and I shot it in a couple abandoned buildings, the North Carolina School for the Deaf and Virginia Intermont College, and both times, and souped it in Extol, and just blown away with, and this is 35 millimeter, how fine the grain is in Extol for a 400 speed film. I've also shot in 120, and I love pulling it to 320 and doing it in PyroCAD HD, and then it's just like dead sharp. And then, of course, the third and final one is the RPX 100, which we all have experience with since we all shot it for our Mystery Camera Challenge.
Yes.
Last year, and even in stock Extol, it turned out really nice with great tonal ranges. And I've actually been souping it in the specialized RPX-D developer, which is designed for the 400 and 100 speed films. And again, just absolutely does incredible work with the 100 speed stuff. And I hope to do some pushing of 400 to 800, and again, using the Extol and RPX-D to really help. It apparently really helps it out. It was one of two developers that they produced for the RPX line. The other one is called Supergrain, which is designed for the two slower films, the 25 and the 100, where the RPX-D is for the 100 and the 400.
Yeah.
And the best part is that the film and the chemistry is readily available in Canada. You can get the film and the developers from our friend at Argentix. And the film is available from Argentix. Downtown Camera carries it, and Burlington Camera carries it.
Yeah. So. Well, also, speaking of Downtown Camera, just a little bit of heads up. Anybody that knows of David Nardi of E6It? He's back in business.
Excellent.
And he has a rather exclusive little deal going on with Downtown Camera. Give them your E6. He gets it. He develops it. And anybody that's ever used David Nardi for E6, yeah, he's fantastic. I used to use him exclusively for all my color film. Didn't matter what it was. Awesome, awesome way to develop. He's fantastic.
Nice.
And the big thing is, he's a big film shooter. He shoots large format. And he almost exclusively shoots slide. So when you send him your slide film, he treats it like his own.
So he will do 4x5 as well.
Absolutely. Nice. I believe he also does...
Good to know.
I believe he does 8x10 slides as well. Okay. Don't quote me. But yes, it's... I believe he shoots 8x10. I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
But we'll double check. You can easily double check. And you can't go wrong. He's fantastic, and now that he's back in business, we've got E6 back in Toronto, everybody.
Excellent. That is great to know, even though I'm now doing it all myself. But whatever.
He's going to be a popular guy.
Yep. Oh, he was before.
That wraps it up for this show. And on even more good news, we're doing a meet. Yes, that's Woo! Right. The 7th of May, Hamilton, Ontario. We are having our first Classic Camera Revival gas meet. That is Gear Acquisition Syndrome meet. Because everyone will be drooling over everybody else's camera. And to make it even better, it's the same weekend as Doors Open Hamilton. So there'll be tons of stuff to shoot, that's including fantastic. the famous Lister block. There's some fantastic, beautiful churches. Not sure. We'll have the full list of open buildings once Hamilton has released it. You can RSVP by joining the Facebook event. You'll find a link for that on our Facebook page, on our Twitter account, and in the episode notes. Or you can email us, classiccamerarevival@gmail.com, to RSVP. Nothing really official about that. Just want to sort of get an idea of the numbers so I know if we have to divide the group and all that. So again, that's the 7th of May, 10 o'clock a.m. in Hamilton, Ontario, in the downtown. Again, exact locations will be on our Facebook page. That's it for me. I'm Alex Lokes, and I'm blinded by the light.
This is John Meadows saying, film cameras are simple. Just work the knobs.
As is Mike Bataxi signing off, but I'm going to tell you right now, keep it under F128, please.
This is Donna Bataxi, and keep that film rolling.